After Football Friday with Paul Feinbaum, presented by Bryant Bank. Your hometown bank with big bank benefits, located in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Now, here's Dan Brennan and Dalton Erwig.
After an illustrious week on FM Talk 106.5 and across the nation with his radio show, Paul Feinbaum joins us on this Friday. Paul, how has the week treated you?
It has been a week to remember. I was just starting in radio 40 years ago when we last encountered Vanderbilt beating Alabama, and that was a disastrous season. Let's hope this one isn't.
Yeah, what a wild game! And I want to talk about that game, Paul. But my question for you is, how soon do you go from being Paul Feinbaum watching a football game, enjoying what you're watching most of the time, some of the time? When does that switch flip to where you go, the calls on Monday are going to be insane? Yeah, and when did that switch flip for you during that Bama game?
Yeah, I mean, my problem with that was I had flown home from Texas, got home early in the fourth quarter, and my wife is a big Alabama fan. And she's cheering for Alabama, and then it suddenly dawned on her that she also has a degree from Vanderbilt. So once she was convinced Vanderbilt was going to win, then she completely went Commodore on me.
Is that right?
I wasn't thinking about the radio in because I was convinced. I mean, even as Diego Fabio was spiking the ball, I was still thinking, yeah, I know they're down double two scores, but Alabama will still figure out a way to win. Mm-hmm. It was only when they were shaking hands that I realized and that we were in for quite a week, and then the text started coming and the tweets, Feinbaum show, and you just and then what you get into is, can we live up to the hype? I kept telling my producers, guys, calm down. I've been down this road before. You can't force it. But fortunately, the show lived up to it. We got the calls that we absolutely had to have. Otherwise, we wouldn't be the Feinbaum show.
Yeah, I think you got, who's the old guy that's always drinking all the beer? Maybe he doesn't do that now because of his health.
You a legend?
No, Larry.
Yeah, Larry, thank you.
So Larry, he was not kind to you at all.
Yeah, he quit the show for the 25th time. He quit because Stephen A. and I were on Monday trashing DeBoer, and I don't think Larry has figured out yet that Alabama lost.
Well, you wouldn't know it talking to some Bama fans around here. It's just they haven't mentioned it since Saturday. Is that the worst loss for Alabama ever? Is that fair to ask?
I think it is, and it was interesting. Sunday morning, I was on SportsCenter, and they were trying to get me to say that. I just wasn't quite sure. I needed it. It's the kind of thing that you just can't make. You have to start thinking. There were worse losses in terms of consequence. I mean, the kick six was that was the DEFCON 1. That cost Alabama national championship. This one just shattered the mystique. And I'll tell you a quick story. You may have heard this guy. We have a guy named Brandon who's I met this guy before. He's a pressure washer, which, you know, is a tough job, mm-hmm. but he's proud of it, as he should be. And he calls himself the Nick Saban of pressure washers.
Yeah, I can think I heard him.
Yeah, so after Alabama beat Georgia, he started calling. He said, hey, I'm the Nick Saban and Kalen DeBoer of pressure washers. Monday he said, I am no longer the Kalen DeBoer of pressure washers. That's how bad it was. And then Legend had the call that has now gone viral. Mm-hmm. That it's like coming home and finding out your wife, ran off with the neighbor. he said Kalen DeBoer, you can win a natty, and I still won't trust you. Wow. That said it all.
Yeah, that does say it all. Paul, if they had lost, they could have easily, without Ryan Williams on their roster, they probably lose to Georgia the week before. That would have been one of the worst losses ever because of the points that Georgia fell behind.
Yeah, I think you're right because just blowing that lead. But you could have still said, well, it's against Georgia. But I've said this 100 times this week. I'll say it the rest of my life. there is just something about losing to Vanderbilt. Yeah. Every high school has a rival that you can't lose to. And somebody said, I was on one of the network, the cable network shows the other day, this erudite professor said, well, it's a little bit like the homecoming queen dumping the captain of the football team and the quarterback for some nerdy science project winner. And, you know, there's just, and listen, we can talk all we want about how far Vanderbilt's program has come. It doesn't matter. It doesn't change the approach of Alabama fans.
Yeah. And you've stated it that way, just the optics of it being Vandy, the doormat of the SEC for 100 years in Alabama, the champion of the SEC for 100 years.
Yeah, it's absolutely something else. You know, as a Tennessee fan, I have been through those Vandy losses before, and they aren't fun to take at all. And sometimes it necessitates a coaching change. That's not coming to Alabama. But Tennessee, another top five team who fell to an unranked opponent on the road this weekend. I wasn't feeling too well watching that game Saturday night, Paul, and watching the game itself didn't make me feel any better. I just keep wondering, I don't know, Heupel seems to kind of just be waiting on his defense to win games. We saw it with Oklahoma. We saw it there with Arkansas.
He doesn't trust Nico
Is there a trust issue between Heupel and Nico, you think?
There could be. And I have to tell you, my personal feelings on that game, by the time that game started to go south for Tennessee, I just said to myself, I don't have time for this. I mean, I can't deal with a Tennessee loss right now on top of an Alabama loss. So I really haven't. I've refused to think about the Tennessee game, guys. I mean, you're right. The Oklahoma game was a little bit of an outlier because Tennessee is just a bad road team. I don't know why that is. I think you're right. Heupel is such a good offensive mind that he tends not to trust his own quarterbacks very much. He didn't do it last year with Joe Milton, and for good reason. And I think he's very skittish on Nico, and he better figure out a way to get right quickly, because you know I'm not overly concerned about Florida at home, but the next week is going to be maybe the entire season on the line.
Yeah, that's Alabama, right?
That's right.
So as a Georgia guy, I'm watching Auburn play Georgia, and it's the first time I really watched an entire Auburn game this year, and I'm thinking to myself, they're not bad. Like, they're pretty good. They're hanging around. It was 14-10 in the third quarter. You know, and eventually Georgia pulls away and wins, but there's just something is missing there. And they didn't have a ton of it wasn't like the obvious turnovers or the pick six, but there's what is missing with Auburn to make them a winning team?
Yeah, you know, watching Georgia Saturday, they're just kind of an ugly team. Mm-hmm. And part of it is they don't have the dynamic receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I don't know why they don't have that. That's all we hear about is how great the recruiting there is. But you know, if you put Ryan Williams on that team, which was always a possibility, or you get another one of these receivers, mm-hmm. then suddenly, and I think that's what Carson Beck is missing. He's got a good running back, but I mean, what was so interesting is I felt like Georgia didn't look good at all, and then they still beat Auburn by 18, and it seemed disappointing.
Exactly. And on the Auburn side, something's just not quite right. Is it Hugh Freeze?
Well, and then you had Hugh Freeze going after his quarterback again.
Oh, yeah.
Saying that he was supposed to hand the ball off on a certain play and pulled it. Every game, Hugh Freeze has had something to say about the quarterback play.
Yep. Yeah, because Hugh Freeze can't admit that he has shortcomings. I mean, it's really getting irritating, and I'm losing faith in Hugh Freeze. I know four losses really shouldn't be a surprise, but just back your quarterback. You're the guy who went all in on this guy.
Yeah.
By the way, you could have had Diego Pavia.
Yeah.
He beat you last year, and you didn't even try to get him. And frankly, I talked to Diego earlier in the week, and nobody really wanted him.
Wow. Isn't that something? Wow.
But you know, Hugh Freeze just continues to dig himself deeper into a hole, and a couple more losses, and that hole is going to be pretty suffocating.
It seems that way. Well, and you also had the big A&M blowout win over Missouri. Kind of running out of time to talk about that one. That was certainly surprising to some folks. But big games coming up this weekend, Paul. And for the first time, the Red River rivalry is an SEC game.
We
get number 1 Texas, number 18 Oklahoma in Jerry's world. Should be a big one Saturday.
Yeah, I'm on my way out to that one. And it just feels so weird going to Dallas for an SEC game. And I realize A&M have played Arkansas there, but this OU Texas has always been one of those games. I mean, as a kid, it was still a game that you watched whether you really knew anything about the teams or not. It's one of the most defining games, and people keep warning me about the food. It's right in the middle of the state fair, I'm told don't eat.
That's pretty blunt.
Yeah, there should be a cardiologist on duty at all times with all the fried. I mean, it's fried ice cream, it's fried everything out there in Texas.
Well, there'll probably be some great food in Baton Rouge. They're kind of known for that kind of thing up the road from New Orleans, and it looks like it could be a very interesting football game. Ole Miss, after a win at South Carolina against LSU.
Yeah, I think this is the most important game of the weekend in the SEC because the winner of this game is in good shape. And I know it sounds cliche to say the loser is in trouble, but it is. If Ole Miss loses, that's two conference games. That means they also have Georgia ahead. And you hate to have to play Georgia in November as a must win, but that would be exactly the situation. LSU is not in great shape either. They lost to Southern Cal. The pressure, I think, is on Lane Kiffin here because he bounced back against South Carolina. I really don't know what that means, bouncing back against South Carolina. This team was a top five team a week ago, and now it's reeling.
Yeah, and this game should be decided by coaching, right? I mean, we're in the middle of the season. No more surprises. Everyone knows.
Well, you have Lane Kiffin against Paul Feinbaum's best friend.
Yeah, Brian Kelly.
Brian Monday Afternoon Kelly.
We were joking that if Kelly loses this game, we might have to cancel on Monday.
You've become your Monday staple, though, right?
Yeah, but it's gotten so long. I mean, we started doing this thinking he'd be in a national championship every year, but we weren't expecting that to sweat games out. It's pretty awkward when you hey coach, welcome in. Just another tough loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a tough conversation.
Tough one to have for sure.
You can hear the audience just tuning out.
Well, you have Bama at home, South Carolina. I guess Gamecocks probably won't provide too much resistance to the Tide, but we didn't think that about Vanderbilt last week either.
Yeah, I fully listen. I'm naive. I think Alabama will bounce back, but I didn't think last week would be a real challenge either. Mm-hmm. But so this is what's really tough about this game. It's an 11 o'clock start, and I don't know about you guys, but who in the world wants to go to a football game at 11 o'clock in the morning, especially when you're kind of down from the previous week? So that's a big negative. And I think the most important thing is what will Kalen DeBoer be wearing?
He caught it for a while.
I had somebody text me last week and say, did he get that T-shirt at Bucky's on the way to the game?
Yeah, a lot of talk about his T-shirt. Maybe to kind of split the criticism, he goes collared shirt, sleeveless. I don't know, maybe something like that to get both fans of the kind of more casual wear and the more business casual there on the sidelines. Well,
then you look like the meat guy at Winn-Dixie. So I don't know if he dressed like the butcher.
Yeah, I don't mind you wearing a shirt, but I mean, get the right size. It looked like like first time you ever washed clothes for yourself in college, and your T-shirt shrank three sizes.
Oh man! And last game to get to, Paul, real quick before we let you go. Tennessee also coming off that loss. At least they're at home this week, but a big rivalry game against Florida. There's going to be some real issues in Knoxville if they lose another one to the Gators.
Yeah, this might be one of the most underwhelming Florida-Tennessee games I can ever remember. In the 90s, this literally was the game of the year in the SEC, and even after that. But Billy Napier is kind of breathing again after, you know, beating two very average teams. This would save his job. If Josh Heupel loses, he might be the coach on the hot seat.
Could be.
Amazing the way this happens.
Yeah.
It's amazing the week to week. I don't think anybody's great. I don't think, you know, well, you know, I think Georgia's got a lot of flaws. Alabama obviously isn't perfect. It's just going to be an interesting season because every week you can't turn your head away from any game because an upset could happen.
No, the last couple of weeks have been really extraordinary. And it's all because of upsets, and there's a million reasons why emotion transfer. But I think the transfer portal is probably the biggest reason.
All right, Paul, we really appreciate your time again this week. Means so much for us that you take time out of your week to answer these questions and have a conversation with us. So thanks again, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
It's always great, guys. See you next week.
Paul Feinbaum, Football Fridays with Feinbaum right here on FM Talk 106.5 and Dan and Dalton on Mobile Mornings. And it's all brought to you by Bryant Bank.
Bryant Bank.
Yeah.
That's right. We appreciate Bryant Bank for sponsoring this. They've been doing it for some time now, and we always appreciate our conversation with Paul Feinbaum. Coming up, more Mobile Mornings on the way.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Terrible accident in it's a tourist thing in Colorado. Now, 23 people had to be rescued. One person actually died. An elevator malfunction trapped them hundreds of feet underground in the Molly Kathleen gold mine. So now they take this old gold mine, they turn it into a, you know, they've got an operating elevator and all. So you have access that you would not normally have as an everyday citizen. And this becomes kind of a touristy thing. Around noon yesterday, the mine experienced a mechanical issue with its elevator system, causing a severe danger for the participants. This is Sheriff Jason Mikesell from that Colorado County.
What occurred was at about 500 feet deep, we had a mechanical issue that created a severe danger for the participants or the riders that were on board.
Among those rescued, two were children, and four were seen by medical personnel for minor injuries, according to Mikesell, who did not provide any details on the fatality. But you take this gold mine, which you would think that's a dangerous place.
Yeah, Cripple Creek, up on Cripple Creek. That's where this gold mine is in Colorado there.
And so then you turn it into something touristy and everything's fine until it's not.
Mm-hmm.
What a way to go what would you call that, actually? I mean, you take something and it's historic and it's romantic and you turn it into
a tourist attraction.
A tourist attraction. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what it was. And someone losing their life at a tourist attraction, that is tough news.
Yeah, that's rough. Yeah, when went out to Colorado once, my brother was either getting ready to or he was already out there for the Air Force Academy, and my dad and I took a little trip over to Cripple Creek.
Oh, so you're familiar with it?
Well, I'm not familiar specifically with the gold mine there, but okay. It was interesting seeing Cripple Creek, which was, I guess, a bustling tourist kind of town. I mean, they wrote a dang song about it, right?
Yeah.
Unless that was about a different Cripple Creek, and it was kind of laid back. Not many people were going there. They had a couple restaurants.
That's when you were out there a couple
years
ago. Yeah,
when we were out there. But, you know, Colorado is one of those places that has all kinds of attractions that are kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
With just the kind of landscape they have in the past. That's tragic, man. You never think that's going to happen.
It is. How about that? Just, you know, so, I don't know. I think Illinois is the state with all these giant things, a giant shoe, a giant crayon, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. They don't usually fall over and kill you.
No, they don't. Hey, when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about the aftermath of Milton and Helene. And how about what's been going on in the VA in Alabama this week? We'll get into it. AM 834 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings on a Friday. Get to the texts and phone calls here in a moment. 251-343-0106. Hey, this is as good a weekend as any. If you've been hearing about daily fantasy sports, wanted to give it a shot. No, it's legal here in Alabama. And this is a great weekend of sports, including a bunch of course, college football games, some top-ranked games as well. You got the Red River rivalry between Texas and Oklahoma, a little Penn State-USC action this weekend. How about Oregon-Ohio State, and tons of SEC games as well. And those are all games that you can choose from when you put together your entry on Underdog Fantasy. Over a million fans across 33 states got in the game last year by competing on Underdog. I just had the funnest time watching these games and playing these games on Underdog Fantasy. Their app, mobile app, is so responsive, and it's so easy to get your pick'em entries in and then watch to see how they're doing, and then watch to see how much money you might possibly win by the end of the day. Making picks on Underdog, it's straightforward. Signing up is even easier to do. All you have to do is this. Just go over to Underdog's mobile app, which is simple to use, or their website, which is very responsive and looks great as well, underdogfantasy.com. Use my promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N. And what you'll get when you use that promo code is a free pick to use on your first cash champions entry, plus up to $1,000 in bonus cash when you deposit. It's Underdog Fantasy, the app or the website. Put in promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N. Claim your new customer special of a free pick and your deposit offer, and let me know how it goes for you this weekend. You can text us, 251-343-0106. Now, you must be 19-plus in Alabama and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. If you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
So we've had these two terrible hurricanes, both made landfall in the state of Florida. So mm-hmm. Ron DeSantis knows a little bit about all this, right? And then you got Helene, you have Milton, two very different storms. One does damage across the state of Florida, Milton the most recent, and the other one does damage through Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Tennessee, all going on in North Carolina, a lot of stuff happening there. And I've mm-hmm. tried to read things and also looked at some podcasts to get an idea of what's the truth here. I think that DeSantis also with a little beef with Kamala Harris. I don't know what she's doing. She's as the storm was coming on to Florida, she's talking crap about DeSantis hasn't returned her calls or what?
Yeah, and just keep in mind how all of that played out during Milton, right? During Helene. So Helene comes through, causes mass amounts of damage, of course. We'll talk more about what's going on there now. But one of the main kind of, refrains from that was the federal government response. And a lot of people felt and still feel that it was lacking, that it took too long for them to start putting events into motion to try to go help people. Yeah. Private citizens were on the ground way before helping the people in North Carolina and Northern Georgia and East Tennessee before the feds even got involved. And then when the feds did get involved, it seemed like they weren't doing anything but slowing things down for some time.
They were regulating things and saying, you can't do this, you can't do that. It was pretty obnoxious.
So the Harris campaign and then the Biden administration, they're probably seeing all of this response and decide they need to push back. So they started pushing back and saying, no, our Helene response has been fine. This and that, blah, 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 blah.
Biden said the people are getting what they need. They're all pretty happy.
Mm-hmm. He said that. And, Harris was a little more, she toured the areas, right? But she was a little more hands-off with Helene. Then when we see that Milton's coming in, it's like she and her campaign said, okay, this time we're going to get ahead of it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make it clear that we're communicating with Ron DeSantis and that we're helping to take care of this situation. Well, DeSantis, he's like, in 3.5 years, there's never been any communication between the vice president and me when there's natural disasters. It's just not part of the protocol.
Yeah.
So this is all political.
She's trying to act like the president.
But then she starts going after DeSantis.
Yeah, like on The View or different talk shows. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty unforced error there.
It does. So DeSantis says, I'm working with the president of the United States. I'm working with the director of FEMA. We've been doing this now nonstop for over 2 weeks, DeSantis said Thursday. Of course, that would be Helene, which hit Florida first and then went on to do what it's done. And he says, although I've worked well with the president, she has never called Florida. She has never offered any support. I don't have time for these games. I don't care about her campaign. Obviously, I'm not a supporter of hers, but she's not. She has no role in this process. I'm also working with the people I need to be working with. Also, DeSantis said, I'm the sheriff here. It all is going to work through me. And I can see why he's saying that now after watching this podcast of Sean Ryan, is that who it is? Mm-hmm. Who had some guys in that were up in the state of Florida. They're from Florida. They fly up. They see the disaster. They can help. So they have organizations that can help in situations like this. But the two guys had never met each other before. They get together. They get up to they fly up to North Carolina. And they immediately run into somebody who says, I think this guy can help because he's got a helicopter. And he's got a, and they end up with this with the guy who has a helicopter. They didn't have a helicopter. They're saving people left and right. And then they're seeing some people taking credit for this on the news, and it's peeing them off a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And then we talk about, just listen closely here, please. When we're talking about politicizing a tragic event, and is Trump doing that? Is Trump not doing that? Well, it's become the talking point now, so the Democrats are going to hammer that home. Trump is politicizing these events. Because of his rhetoric and the way he says what he says, he may be out of bounds by a yard or two. But in my way of thinking, if you're just, the tragedy happens, and then you're just speaking about what you have observed. Well, the Democrats happen to be in charge. So you can say you're politicizing the whole argument, or you can say this is the shortcomings I see with the federal response. You can say that's, you know, politicizing the whole thing, but really, if you're just saying this response has been weak to non-existent to way late to whatever, that's not really politicizing. I guess and when you're weeks away from an election, you could consider that. But when you're saying FEMA has really dropped the ball here, we're not sure why. You don't have to say it's a conspiracy or any of that. They have just been, it's a big government, and they have been ineffective in this situation. Topography probably got something to do with it. In Florida, things are flat and you can get to where you're going. It's the talking point of this, of the response by FEMA being politicized, I think is incorrect, because you're just saying what you're seeing, and people who have got no dog in the fight in terms of the presidential election, that's what I'm trying to find, those people. And what they're saying is it's not been good.
Yeah, that's the message that I care about, right? Or the people that are on the ground, the volunteers that are helping out.
Yep.
We have two candidates here, right? You have Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. And we're within a month of the national election at this point. Anything they do or say is inherently political.
Right.
They are both political animals, right? So if Trump says anything about the storm while he's on the campaign trail, you're politicizing the storm. If Kamala Harris says anything about the storm while she's on the campaign trail, the storm's being politicized. So it's kind of like it's a weird, and it's something that all Americans say, like it shouldn't be politicized, but it is political. So it's kind of a really weird kind of barb to throw out there, but everyone just accepts it, right? That the storm has been politicized. You know, if it was just people on the ground that had been affected by the storm, and you didn't have Trump or Kamala saying anything, then but I'm right there with you. Because the people on the ground are saying that the response from FEMA has been lackluster, that's not a political statement.
No.
They're saying...
No, it's not a political statement.
Right.
These people are dying and trapped and whatever because of FEMA's poor response. Mm-hmm. That's not a political statement. That's saying FEMA's half-ass. In the worst time when you've got to be on top of your game, like the Secret Service. What are we going to... Is that politicizing it? No. The Secret Service, they were terrible. Mm-hmm. They were not... it wasn't their A-game. And I just get tired of people trying to call that being political when a lot of these people are just suffering and saying what they're seeing. Those two guys from Florida that went up
on
there,
the Sean Ryan podcast.
And they only have the best intentions.
And I was going to play the clip. I didn't check it ahead of time for the old FCC buzzwords, which have been known to fly around on the Sean Ryan show. So I'm not going to play it. But part of that interview, and, you know, these seem like trustworthy dudes. They're veterans. They went to North Carolina to assist. They said that, so while all of that was flying around about Kamala Harris not caring about the storm and Biden being late to the party, these two dudes, Jonathan Howard and Charlie Keebaugh, with the aerial recovery members, said that one of them said, I had a squadron commander from North Carolina reach out to me. They had a C-17. They loaded a C-17 full of hurricane relief supplies.
Right.
And they used that fully loaded with supplies C-17 for a photo op for Kamala Harris, uh-huh. He said, right? And which is, I guess, fine, right? But they never sent the C-17 with the recovery supplies
to where it was,
it was supposed to go, according right. to the squadron commander that contacted either this man, Jonathan Howard, or Charlie Keebaugh. That is a bit of a controversy, sure. isn't it? If yeah. they load up a C-17 with things for a photo op and then never actually send the supplies, I'd love to a real journalist to kind of dig in and see if that actually happened.
That's the problem. Real quick, who's covering this thing and how transparent are they being? And I'm talking about news organizations, mm-hmm. okay? Who is covering this? And you've got NBC, ABC, CBS are there, but are they telling us the facts? And I would say with this election around the corner, they're not.
Hmm.
So who's politicizing what is what I'm saying. If the media is keeping us from the real, or at least a corner of the story we'd be interested in, what are balls and strikes? How well has FEMA done? Have they been lackadaisical? We're not getting that narrative from the mainstream media, and I think it's there's your tragedy. The tragedy itself, and then the fact the way this thing is being covered, is it really being covered tough? And let's find the facts, and are people guilty of a poor response? Mm-hmm. And is it FEMA? And is it the government? And
it's going to take some time, too, right?
Or should it? If you're simply on the ground right now, you're with CBS or you're with CNN, and your job is to cover this storm from every corner, then isn't that inherently the story? That the help is not getting to the people?
Mm-hmm.
If it is not, and the more and more credible people that I read up on and see on the podcast like the Sean Ryan, these guys they've got no reason to cry foul about Democrat response or whatever. They're just saying, man, it's sad.
Mm-hmm.
And the sadness of this all is not being covered that I see.
Another thing I've been thinking about and watching the staging of linemen and first responders for both Milton and Helene, and seeing the big diesel trucks that are making it out there, folks that are taking their four-wheel drives to get to places that other people can't.
Right.
They're tying up their winches, pulling people out of mud pits, mud slides. They're doing all of these things, and I'm picturing a future where we have phased out gas and diesel engines.
Not good.
Could you expect, a convoy of electric vehicles to ride into Asheville, North Carolina, where the roads are all blocked?
Thank God that's not the case.
Start pulling people out and getting people out of there. I mean, imagine the tragedy if we were fully electric at this point. Mm-hmm. Maybe we would have built the infrastructure up enough that it would be a little bit more stable than it is right now. But thank God for gas and diesel engines that are out there saving people. This one story, I don't know if you saw this, Dan, as they continue to uncover bodies in the mountains up there in North Carolina, 11 members of the same family were killed during Helene. There's a GoFundMe up there now called Support the Craig Family After Tragic Loss. 11 people in the Craig family in a town called Fairview, about 12 miles southeast of Asheville, in a town known as Craigtown. So you have the Craig family in Craigtown. 11 folks died due to a landslide that was triggered by those rains. A resident close to that Craig family said that the family members lived in several houses beside each other. All of them were crushed during the mudslide. One family member, Jesse Craig, said that he lost his mother, father, aunt, uncle, great aunt, great uncle, cousins, and second cousins in the incident. He said 11 people overall from this mudslide. That's what they're dealing with here, and it's not just the Craig family. It's one right after the other. And then there's, who knew that, I'm sure some of you did, that North Carolina was such an important part of our country. Not that I didn't think it was unimportant, but we talked about the quartz mine and how that might shut some things down for some technological things that they produce using quartz.
Yes.
But how about the potential IV shortage nationwide.
Out of Florida?
Yeah. Well, no, out of...
in North Carolina.
Out of
North Carolina.
Yeah. Baxter International produces 60% of America's IV fluid supply. So you have hospitals out on the West Coast who are now rationing their IV fluids because everyone, all these hospitals are seeing the potential of this becoming a serious problem. The plant produces 60% of America's IV fluid supply at 1.5 million bags daily. And their supply that they had there was flooded out. And I think they've been having issues getting back into action here. Hospital in Boston is conserving its supply. UVA Hospital, same thing here, postponing some elective and non-life-threatening surgeries. This is a big deal. There's some really important places that have been more or less shut down because of Helene.
Could be national shortages.
Yeah.
To the text line real quick here, Dalton. From Gene, you two are such awful human beings. Hope you take a shower after your show and disinfect everything. Shame on you for spewing fake news. Where was the fake news?
Right? I don't know. Gene.
I replied, if you think that, Gene, thank you.
Yeah. Must mean we're the opposite of Gene saying it.
Yeah.
Fake news. Human beings.
Yeah.
What's the fake news there, Gene? Let us know.
FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. To the text line we go. And the real Sam says, I'm a long-haul truck driver. I listen to liberal radio. It's tough to find that out there, by the way. And conservative radio all day. Respectfully, Gene is an idiot. Now, I didn't say that. I think Gene and I have got different points of view. And I think Gene probably, I don't know, might... He or her, I don't know which, but they consume their news through a certain kind of outlet and probably believes everything that they texted us.
Yeah,
so.
Gene consumes their news through this outlet and bitches all day. That's fine. That's fine, Gene. You know, I think we would agree on a lot of things if you would allow yourself, but don't.
I could have a glass of lemonade with Gene. We could work it out.
Yeah, I'm glad that... I'm glad that I don't really care what Gene thinks. You know, I got friends and family and a bunch of listeners that seem to like us. So that's cool.
Gene has any of that.
How about this? Damn Yankee. A crisis here in Mobile directly caused by Hurricane Milton. The new Wawa is out of donuts because their stores are resupplied from Orlando.
Oh, wow.
Damn Yankee says it could be weeks before the new Wawa has week-old donuts back on the shelves. So that's, I didn't even think of that that possibility. Reynolds. Thank you, Reynolds. He says, I think y'all are wonderful human beings. Daniel, tell Gene the fake news is on the TV. We're hammering Gene. I think I'm gonna lighten up on Gene here. I'm not going to read all of these texts that seem to have been brought in here. Haywood says, Gene is monitoring you on the list for the Ministry of Truth, or just does not like a difference of opinion. I'm not sure where the opinion was. There's been a widespread response from people on the ground that said the federal response has not been great enough for Helene.
And I said, is the media covering it like they should?
And that made you an awful human being, Dan. And you should have never brought that question up.
I'm terrible.
Jeff Poor Show on the way. Todd Stacy. Hour number one. Hour number two, Pete Ream, man we know well, right here on Mobile Mornings. And hour number three, State Senator Chris Elliott joining the show. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, Pete also one of those that was saying that taking your things to like local churches was probably the better idea than dropping them off at the Bema sites.
Okay.
He had a lot more faith in that and saw more coordinated effort. 8:59, and Jeff Poor is on the way next.